Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hi.
Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And JD Short.
Oh, hi, I didn't see you there.
Exactly. Well, that is it. This is we're on to episode 3 of the second season of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. Of course, this
still running with that gag then.
Yes, as shall be until 10 episodes time, and then it will be season 3. Anyway,
what?
Yeah, no, no.
I thought it was a full year.
It's a full year. It's a full year. Each season is a year. It's yeah,
okay.
That's how it's going to be. Anyway, each month in 2021, we're donating to a new charity. This month, dear listener, we're donating to helpmusicians.org.uk, and we thoroughly recommend you checking them out as well. A wonderful charity put in place to help all the musicians who are, you know, down on their luck with all of the restrictions and the lack of live music or touring or anything. There are some really great kind of emergency funding things that help musicians are doing. So go and check that out. Now, last week, we were talking a lot about NAMM 2021, which didn't happen, not in the real life, not IRL, but of course it did happen on the Tinternet with Believe in Music. We spoke about a lot of the things that that had come out last week. But, of course, it was only Monday, the first of 5 days in Believe in Music last week. So more things have come out. Less than I'd hoped for. I mean, there was, you know, last week I was like, oh, there's so much stuff. This is actually good. This is okay. I can deal with 2021. But then, there hasn't been a fantastic follow-up. Still, some really good, interesting things. So we're going to try and get through.
Just, there'll be more of a constant stream rather than, you know.
Yeah,
it's going to be great for filling out the news section of the podcast this year.
Exactly.
It means we're going to have things to talk about all year rather than constantly referring back to the things that happened, you know, 6 months ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, welcome to JD back onto the main Guitar Nerds podcast. JD's been co-hosting the Bass Guitar Nerds podcast with us, and of course appeared on some NAMM episodes back in 2018.
A long time ago.
It's been a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, so thank you for rejoining the team this week. And also, welcome to Carl Hinkle, who joins us at the $5 tier on our Patreon. Hello, Carl, and welcome.
Hi, Joe.
Guest host. Realize that's how this works.
Guest host.
Sorry?
Guest host, Carl. Is that Carl with a C or Carl with a K?
With a C.
Okay.
With a C. Now, before we get started on any of the NAMM news from 2021, I got sent, you'll remember we did a little discount voucher with this company a little while ago, and I finally got hold of Stompbox The Brick, the book set of the vintage and rarities and the Stompbox book itself. I am enjoying it greatly. Dear listener and co-host, I thoroughly, thoroughly recommend getting it. So it's heavyweight, massive, hardback, could kill a person if thrown. It's
Joe Branton in the studio with the brick.
Book. My question for you, Joe, is where is this book living? so far. Is it in your like office? You know, living under the pretense that you're going to pick it up and read it occasionally, when you're trying not to work? Is it in the living room because it feels like a sort of coffee table book? Is it in the toilet because, you know, that's also the sort of place you read a coffee table book? Or has it been relegated to the kitchen to be used as a tofu press, which is what I tend to do with very heavy books like that? I buy them because I'm like, oh, this is cool, I'm going to love reading this. And then it just ends up in the kitchen pressing tofu. So, you know.
That's there's, well, currently it is in the office. I did think this is a good toilet read book, but I'm currently trying to top my score of 3 marbles left on the table in marble solitaire whenever I go to the bathroom.
You haven't solved that yet.
Well, I can't get it down to one in the middle. I think 3 is not bad.
I don't know what this is. That sounds good, though.
Yeah, marble solitaire is great. It's a wonderful game. It's a wonderful game. Peg solitaire to JD, I think. Yes. I think the American version has pegs.
Don't know.
I think there was a there is some form of chain of American restaurant that that has peg solitaire like out on the tables for you to play.
Oh, yeah, McDonald's. Oh,
Cracker Barrel.
Oh.
I think I think I still remember the algorithm to solving it.
Oh, really? You can solve solitaire?
Yeah.
Matt, really?
Yeah.
I don't want you to teach me, but, you know, I'll get there eventually,
I hope. My nan used to do it all the time.
Oh, it's such a good game.
Once we'd worked out how to do it, you just sit down and do it every time because you're just
Once you've unlocked it, you've sort of ruined the game.
It was like my mate with the Rubik's Cube. Once he worked out the algorithm, or read the algorithm to solve Rubik's Cube and then memorized it. Yeah, pretty straightforward after that.
I think the idea of like having the Stumbug's book in the toilet with you is like a safety measure, and that it really keeps you like sort of off your phone and off like, you know, like sites looking for those pedals.
Because
it's such a big book, you have to kind of like balance properly. It feels intentional.
Yeah, maybe that is where I should put it. But no, it has been in the office, and I have been reading it over the last few days, flicking through and like finding, because on every glossy page you get a nice big picture of some weird vintage. But I've been flicking through Vintage and Rarities because that was, you know, the more interesting to me than hearing sort of celebrity guitarists say what their favorite pedals were. I wanted to see the Vintage and Rarities stuff, and I've been flicking through, finding a pedal that I've never seen before, and then reading about it, which has been wonderful. Today, I was reading about the 1971 Rands RM29 Resley machine.
What is that?
Well, it's a copy of the Maestro PS1, the phase shifter. And so it was a Japanese company called Shinny who capitalized on kind of making the Resley machine, and the reason it's called Resley was an unfortunate Japanese phonetic garbling of the word Leslie.
Which
is why it ended up with an R. But reading kind of all that information, you think about how pedals started and how still separate around that time sort of the movements of music were between kind of, you know, Japan, America, and the UK, and how everyone was advancing at different paces with the gear that was available. And this was kind of the start of, you know, as Japan would go on to then absolutely dominate, taking American designs and making them more affordable without sacrificing any of the quality. I've really enjoyed reading about that. That looks absolutely fantastic. I need a Leslie Sim in my life. And I was reading, of course, about another Japanese pedal, the Yamaha SB100, which we've talked about before, Matt, I believe, on the podcast, which was the SB100 was Yamaha's first version of like a modular multi-effects. So a master board that you'd then buy the individual modules for octave, compressor, the limiter, distortion, chorus. And then those were all the single pedals. And they also did like double size pedals that you could, one double size pedal that would fit in along the top of the unit, which they had like analog delay and a couple of other like a reverb things that would require more controls potentially.
Right.
But yeah, just
as used by Tony Levin in King Crimson in 1981, as per this reverb listing.
Oh, really? There you go. But that's the thing that I love about this book is, you know, it is obviously wonderful just scrolling through the pages of reverb and finding weird, interesting things, but you don't always get the story, and then sometimes you end up kind of, you know, I guess Googling as much as you can to sort of dig up on these old pedals. And it's just really nice to have it all in one very coherent place and being able to learn about these things and find your next obsession. I thoroughly recommend the Stompbox Brick, or, you know, just the Vintage and Rarities. I blooming love the Vintage and Rarities book. It's very cool.
Just depressing. So many things you'll never be able to get.
that is also true. Oh, well, anyway, we should talk about some news related things, some NAMM news. Let's start the ball rolling with you, Matt. This was something you wanted to talk about last week, and we never actually got round to it on the main episode. But one of your favourite effects brands have brought something interesting to the table.
Yes. Yeah, brand that, well, we've talked about since episode one of the Guitar Nerds podcast, Pigtronix. Not necessarily quiet on the pedals front. I think the Infinity 2 was the only new thing I remember from last year, which was their double looper. And I didn't realise that basically everything in their product range, apart from one pedal and this new Infinity Looper, is actually a mini pedal. So they've done away with all of the old stuff and they've moved to a mini pedal format.
Always were a company that went for odd shapes. You know, the sort of like slender but wide compressors that they used to do.
Yeah, like the Philosopher's Tone was like kind of MXR size.
Yes, it's horizontal rather than vertical.
Well, I mean, that's the way the graphic goes. That's not the way you need to put it on your board.
Oh, true. I see what you're saying. Yeah,
Jay. I hate pedals. I've got one on my board at the moment that's not the
pedals.
Right way up.
He hates pedals. You hate pedals.
You heard it here first. That aren't the right way up. I've bought new pedal boards. Just so my pedals are the right way up.
Why does it matter though?
But Jay, you gig. You don't have to look at your pedal board. I have to look at it all day.
Matt, it's 2021. Nobody gigs. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Oh, yes. But anyway, so yeah, Pigtronix have released three brand new pedals. The Moonpool, the Constellator, and the Space Rip. So the Moonpool is their Tremvelope Phaser, which I think is probably a reimagining of the Tremvelope with a little bit of a mix of the old, very first Pigtronix Phaser. So effectively, you have a Phaser and a Tremolo in one box that you can then kind of blend between, and then you have a dynamic control. So you can then control how fast or how slow each moves based on the velocity of your playing. So you've got a four-stage VCA-based phaser and a variable bias tremolo. So bias trem is based more on the push and pull of the power into the valves rather than up and down in volume. And you can run them as standalone effects, or yes, you can sort of mash them up into one new effect, which is very, very cool. Looks amazing. Gone for a whole bunch of new graphics and new designs on the website. The color palette is fantastic. It's sort of a pink, a mauve, and a white. So I'm really into that, the Moonpool. Priced at around $179.
Oh, really?
So I think very, very reasonable. And very, very solid. If it's the same chassis they're using as they have on their other mini pedals, like the Philosopher's Tone Mini, they do feel like mini bricks. So that's very good. The Space Rip is, as they describe it, an analog synth buzzsaw.
Oh, yes.
So this is a fully analog synth pedal that's basically a pulse width modulated sawtooth and square wave in multiple octaves. So it's giving you that sort of fattest sort of single synth note lines. It's got apparently relatively fast tracking, so obviously it'll track sort of all the sort of single note lines that you want to play. And yeah, you can replicate both pitch and dynamics. They said, sounds like tearing the fabric of space-time in half.
Yes.
Which is very, very cool. And then there's an additional sub-control, which adds an additional octave down. So you can go for that really meaty synth tone. Again, fantastic color palette here. We're looking at sort of a light green, a forest green, and a black. I'm into it. I think it's very, very cool. But yeah, something if you want that sort of analog vibe, if they do an analog synth already, the Mothership, this is just, I'm guessing, a scaled back version of that. And then this one, I'm very excited about, the Constellator, which is their modulated analog delay.
Oh, now we're talking.
Yes. So if I remember rightly, they... Obviously, Pigtronix and Supro are quite closely tied, and there was a Supro analog delay which was designed by Howard Davis, who sure most people won't know, but he was the designer of the original Deluxe Memory Man. So the Supro delay was very much based on that sort of old Deluxe Memory Man design. And whether he's had a hand in this, I don't know. I've watched a couple of the demos, and it's got that Deluxe Memory Man feel. So what you've got here is an all-analog 600 millisecond delay pedal with modulation. So, you know, you're going from sort of, they reckon, tape-like saturation when pushed to the limit. But what's very, very cool is, yeah, there's this feel control in the
middle. What is the feel control? It's like a little... Is it a rotary or is it a button?
No, I think it's just a button.
Right.
So the feel toggle adjusts several parameters simultaneously for an additional colouring of LFO modulation. And then, yeah, using Bucket Brigade chips. I don't know what chips they're using, but I'd imagine it's probably the X5 chip, which is in most things at the moment. Let me just check. Actually, that's a lie. They're actually using a Panasonic one, which is pretty good. So Panasonic, I think, were making some of the original BBD chips before. And for those delay fanatics, it also increases the power to 15 volts, so you get a little bit more headroom. That's one of the joys of the old Electro-Harmonix Deluxe Memory Man, is it's 24 volt, so you get a ton of headroom. So I'm super, super excited about this. Same price as the others, $179.
In dollars? That's very... Dollars.
Yeah,
that's an aggressive price point. I'm excited about these.
Yeah, I'm super keen for this one. I think this could be a real winner. That's all the Pigtronix stuff. But very, very cool. Good to see him sort of coming out with a bunch of new stuff. It feels like they haven't come out with a new pedal. You know, Looper, you know, it's pretty cool, but they haven't come out with a new effect.
They've been quiet, haven't they? For a brand that used to really lead the way, they have been a little quiet. So it's nice to see new things. I had no idea until we've obviously gone through the pedals now that the bulk of what they're doing is now mini pedals. I thought they were doing the mini pedals in addition to, not...
No, so just for anyone, you know, who just wants a quick refresher, Philosopher's Tone, the Octava, which is their octave fuzz, the Gatekeeper, the Philosopher's Tone, Germanium, and Distortion and Class A Boost are now all in mini pedal format. The only thing slightly bigger than that are the Mothership 2 and the Resotron. They did have a ring modulator as well, but I think that has also been discontinued, which is a bit of a shame, but I'm guessing maybe potentially not a super popular seller.
The Mothership 2 used to... that used to be massive. And
yeah,
it does,
the original Mothership was huge.
Yeah, and they've managed to get this onto a normal pedal size, but it looks like with a lot of concentric controls.
Yes. So basically every control on there is concentric, but it's still full analog, which is awesome.
That's very cool.
So yeah, full three-voice analog synth, priced at $249. So again, very, very competitively priced, I would say.
Indeed, quite so. Cool additions from Pigtronix.
Absolutely.
Okay, and next up on the NAMM news, we're going to return to Fender. Fender really, really bringing out the big guns this NAMM. It feels like they haven't stopped releasing stuff. There's been so many new ranges from Squire and Fender, and also some real kind of Gear of the Year contenders as well. But one thing we didn't speak about last week was amplifiers, Fender amplifiers. I'm not sure they'd landed yet when we were talking about them. But Jay, talk to me about what Fender have offered in the new in the way of amplifiers.
Yeah, so there's three new amps that came out this year. First up is a couple of additions to the 68 range, which is, you know, a range that we've always really liked. When they first brought those out with the Twin and the Deluxe, it was just kind of a slightly cheaper, slightly different flavor to what you would expect from the 65. So this is the 68, so the silver panel with the blue writing as opposed to the black panel with the white writing that you would expect on the 65s. So in the 68 range, there is going to be a brand new 5-watt Vibrachamp.
Which is yeah.
Really cool. Yeah. So 5-watt Vibrachamp. Now, what you've got with that is a 10-inch speaker with proper tube vibrato, obviously. And then there's also a like a digital reverb has been added to that.
Oh, no, it's a digital reverb. Oh, well I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. I was just I wanted it to be like all...
A big spring reverb. I mean, interestingly, it's the reverb that's in there is actually a Hall reverb. So
really?
I guess the... So it's the reverb from the Marine Layer, the Fender reverb pedal.
Oh,
and
that's
I guess
very cool.
The reason that it's... The they've gone with the Hall reverb is, you know, the probably this is going to be used by people at home, but you wanted to sort of, you know, bring in that kind of big empty room that you usually play in when you're I mean, if your band's anything like mine, then, you know, you want to be able to simulate that like large empty room. So I assume that's why they've gone with that. But yeah, really, really cool. It's cool to see something that's you know, a kind of another kind of premium style small amp, which I think will be really popular. But
two-band EQ, no master volume. Very cool.
Yeah, I think it's going to be... I think I'm really interested in this. I think it's going to be a very, very cool amp. But the one that I think podcast listeners will be more interested in is the new 68 Custom Pro Reverb. Pro Reverbs haven't really been, or well, Pros as a whole haven't really been available properly for a long time. I mean, the original Pros of the 60s and 70s were 2x10s, and there was maybe a Tweed, like a 57 Pro available at one point. This is kind of, along with a lot of the other amps within the 68 range, it's kind of, that's considered like the vintage modified. So it's bringing old, like changing a couple of bits with the old style of amps and bringing them into modern usability. And so this is turned from a 2x10 into a single 12, so 1x12. And it has got a Celestion Neo cream back in. It's a 40 watt. It's got proper tube trem. It's got proper spring reverb. It's also got a mid control, which is something that the old Pros never really had. But basically, this is like half of a Twin. So if you want the sound of a Twin, but you don't want a Twin because they're massive, this is essentially a 1x12 version of that.
I'm surprised I went with the Neo speaker, but I'm guessing just to keep the weight down?
Yeah, I assume so. I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't. Those Neo creambacks, they sound so good. I mean, those are the speakers that are in... You see those in a load of amps, actually, and there's another amp I'm going to be talking about later on if we've got time, which is also using the creamback. But you know, creambacks are in the Tone Masters, they're in all sorts of things, and I think they sound great. I really, really like the Neo creambacks. I don't see why you wouldn't use them.
I think that they're a bit of a Marmite speaker. I think some people really like the Neo stuff and some people don't, you know. But yeah,
because is that because
like
they like, I mean, whenever my opinion of them has always been just like they kind of like they take gain really well, they take drive pedals really well.
I'm guessing, you know, some people with a better ear than maybe me are the magnets are different, they react with the amp differently, so it makes the amp respond differently.
Okay.
But to be honest, and we've always been on this podcast, if you plug it in and it sounds good, then
why does it matter?
Yeah. Then great. Yeah. You wouldn't not buy us if you were, it was like when, you know, we'd sell something to someone in store and they'd be like, I've got to have this, 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 and this. And they'd plug it in and we, oh, this is amazing. And then we'd be like, oh, it doesn't have this. You know, 9 times out of 10, they'd be like, oh, actually, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
occasionally you get,
yeah.
Oh, well, no, I don't want to buy it. And it's like, you just said it's the best guitar I've ever played. Yeah, well, it doesn't have the 5105 frets on it. So, you know.
Yeah. Classic. Mm. Yeah. Oh, would you be able to refret this for me if I was to buy it today?
For free. Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that's going to be really cool. The Pro, I think, will be great. I'm really interested in the Champ, but I think the Pro will be a really good kind of like pedal platform type amp.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think those are going to be popular. The other one, and I, you know, I realize we talked a lot about Fender, so I'll keep this brief, but the other one that's, again, just something a little bit different is the Mustang Micro. So this is the newest addition to the Fender Mustang series of kind of like practice amps. And I think this is going to be a real popular product. So the Micro is a headphone amp, essentially. So it's... it looks like the, in terms of kind of the size and shape, like the Vox Amplugs, that type of design.
So it's a little module that goes on the end of a jack sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly that. And but with it, it's actually got quite a lot going on inside. So you've got 12 different amp models.
So it's a stripped back version of the GT. So it doesn't have like all the stuff from the GT.
Correct. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So there's no like, you haven't got the accessibility through like the app or anything like that. It's
right.
All built
oh,
in.
Right. I see.
So you've got 12 different amp models, which do come from the, from the GTX, which is the amp, the like the range of practice amps that launched last year. So 12 amp models from there, and 5 different EQ settings for each of those.
So it's just like a master EQ suite rather than you adjusting bass, middle and treble. It's
correct. Yeah. So you've got an EQ control on there, which the EQ has got plus or minus. So basically there are preset EQs within, so if you go on 65 Twin, for example, you can cycle through 5 different preset sounds. It's not just a case of going more tone, less tone. Lots more tone, you know, there's 5 different presets in there. And then there's also 12 or 13 options for effects. But rather than it being just a case of, okay, you can choose a reverb or you can choose a delay or you can choose a chorus, what they've actually done is they've built 12 different effects chains. So there's a selection of, if you do just want a reverb, that's on there. If you do just want a delay, that's on there. But if you want flange and reverb, that's on there. If you want chorus, delay and reverb, that's on there. If you want tremolo and reverb, like with the treverb, that's on. So there's like, it's designed to be like pedal boards almost, as opposed to just individual pedals. So I think that's going to be really that's a cool way to just push those around. And then you've also got with that 6, I think, different presets for the effects on each of those choices as well. And it's £100. I think it's less than £100. I think it's going to be really popular. You've got Bluetooth in as well, so you can stream along. You can hook it up to Spotify or whatever and then play along with that. And
that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be mega. I mean, we all saw how popular the Wazza headphones were. And in fact, Mark isn't here today, but he was talking, he just got some and he was telling us about how much he loved those. And I think it's just people are looking for a way to play guitar like that, you know, without annoying the people that you live with.
Well,
and
exactly.
I think this is going to be another option for that. I think it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, this is kind of the time, isn't it, for products like this to do very well. Of course, the Wazza headphones slightly... preceded any lockdowns or pandemics and just got very lucky with that product. But this is exactly what people are going to want to get their hands on. Very cool. And, you know, all the GT stuff is great. I'd love it if I could access an entire GT off of, you know, a handful of buttons
on
a little jack switch. But I appreciate the limitations of that. yeah, this seems like a really cool
addition.
Yeah,
I mean, for like less than 100 quid, I think it's a good compromise.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Cool. Very cool. Now, Gibson. Gibson have also been releasing a whole bunch of stuff. They've announced their entire lineup, and we're going to actually be talking about the 2021 Gibson lineup a lot more on the Patreon episode of this podcast over at patreon.com/guitar nerds. But before we do that, JD, I do want to talk about a really quite wonderful addition to the Gibson bass lineup.
Yeah, that the new Gibson non-reverse Thunderbird bass that's been reissued.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm assuming that's what you want to
talk
about.
Yes, that is absolutely what.
Yeah. No, I mean, these look excellent. And so if anyone's familiar with the sort of Thunderbird body shape, the idea here is with the non-reverse is that they really just sort of feel like a more traditional kind of offset look. Like when you see them, and they just feel very, very classy, very classic. They're all mahogany, two Thunderbird pickups, come in three colors, the Inverness green, Pelham blue, which is classic, which is what they used to have as well, and then a sparkling burgundy, which I'm really into. Honestly, the Inverness green and the Pelham blue are, considering if you only have three colors, those two are very similar,
yeah,
I think, when you look at them, but I mean, in the sense that they're both great and it would be really tough to pick. But I think, like, you know, to really just get a, you know, an all mahogany rosewood board set neck Gibson, you know, and have it sort of be that cross between the Thunderbird body and that sort of kind of more typical offset look. Like, I mean, honestly, I think this is what I'd end up going for, because I've been in the back of my mind pondering a Thunderbird for quite some time. And just thinking, like, because I've never actually owned one properly, and I'd be like, why haven't I? But it feels like this to me is kind of, it just gives it that kind of look, because Thunderbirds are such a, speaking of Marmite, you know, like, they're such a Marmite absolutely. Look where it's like, is it cool or is it not cool? And I can't tell. Like, most of the time, if it's like, this looks great, or you're just like, oh, you can look like you're playing a Thunderbird.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, can I pull this off? Or, you know, am I going to look like I'm in some cock rock band? I can never work out which one of those two things it's going to be.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes that's great, you know? And like, but yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I'd feel, especially playing like a bunch of different kinds of stuff, like I'd feel like sometimes, you know, like playing those where you see like a jazz bass fits in literally every situation you can play a jazz bass or a precision. And it sort of feels like this fits much more in that vein, where it's just a classic look, but has all of the same vibe as a Thunderbird without just being, you know, without having it being, you know, as flipped as it is. But it, yeah, I I think these are banging.
Yeah, I think that they look absolutely fantastic, and I agree. Like doing these interesting colors, especially when it's set neck and you get the finish all the way up the back of the neck, it just looks fantastic. I remember when they reissued these when we were all in GAC, guys. These were reissued before in Pelham Blue. And I think the other color was Sunburst that they were put out in before. Must have been like 2013, something like that.
Yeah.
And I thought they were great back then.
Well, and the thing then is that, like, I think the Pelham Blue one, at least if I remember correctly, the Pelham Blue ones then had like black hardware and like black headstock. And where like these ones are all have like chrome hardware matching, you know, like matching color headstock with, you know, just a black truss rod cover. But it's like, and I think there's something about like the actual like the chromeness of everything just makes it feel sort of more timeless and classic, and sort of it looks like a bass that would stand the test of time that you could play 20 years ago or 20 years from now, probably.
Yeah.
You know, assuming there is a 20 years from now. But you know, like but it just sort of feels like I mean it's just It's really been impressive. And like Gibson's usually not a brand that I've never really owned any Gibson stuff. And that being said, when I was young, I had like all the Gibson catalogs hung up, like, hung up on around my bed. You know, it's just like, it's like, ooh, look at the Tennessee Gentle, you know, like Country Gentlemen's and all these, and like things I didn't even care about, just would like read through all the specs of everything Gibson. And like, yeah, I think this is the first thing that's really been. That's excited me.
It does a good job of kind of crossing that. Like Gibson basses are very much, they're a bit like, not the same as, but a bit like Hofner basses, not in how they sound, but in that they work with this one particular thing. And if you're trying to branch outside of it, and that's why Fender basses and Fender style basses will always be so popular, is because the versatility is just boundless. You know, there's nothing that you can't apply them to. And, you know, you get a bit hamstrung by the tone of a Gibson bass. This, I mean, I know it's tonally going to be the same as a Thunderbird, but it's visually much more acceptable by modern standards as well. I agree, the chrome pickups look fantastic. Someone posted on the Facebook group, actually.
I think that was Brandon.
Yeah, Brandon Ivy posted a picture of Mike Watt with a single pickup. Totally bashed up version of this. Did you see that, Jay, at all?
No, I didn't.
No, it looked it was right up your street. Just really cool. He had one chrome humbucker in the middle, Pelham Blue, but absolutely wrecked with a handful of stickers on it as well. Very cool.
Well, this is a bit of a blind spot in my otherwise vast and unending knowledge. But what's the history of the non-reverse? Because it's the same with Firebirds as well. Like you always see reverse Thunderbirds and reverse Firebirds. That's like the most popular of those models. But surely the non-reverse came first. Like, why is the non-reverse? Like, because otherwise, why would it be called a reverse Thunderbird? Like, what do you know what the deal is with that? Like, I assume that they launched them first.
I presume it's actually the other way round, but these are called non-reverse simply because it's a more traditional shape. Like, if you think about Fender as the industry standard of a guitar, you're going to have your strap button over the 12th fret, and with the Thunderbird, your strap button's, you know, way up there over sort of the 18th fret, and just moving the body around makes it more Fender-esque. Oh, I really think the reverse ones came first.
Yeah,
I think
actually. Wikipedia.
Oh, here we go.
Should we sit down, Matt? I'll take a seat.
Let's take classic Wikipedia. So, you know, pinch of salt here.
I mean, I realised I could have looked this up whilst you were talking.
Gibson Thunderbird. So introduced in 1963 as the Gibson competitor to the Precision bass that released 12 years earlier. A bit slow there, chaps.
Whoa, that's already wrong. I mean, that's already wrong, because Gibson's competitor, Gibson released a bass before Fender released a bass with the EB1.
Yeah, but I think that probably got smashed by Fender. So
I think what they're saying, what it's saying, because the EB1 is a very specific shape, you know, it's an SG, whereas what
Matt's it wasn't, it's a violin bass, it was a solid body violin bass that it was it was designed to be played upright, so
they wanted to release something that you could play the modern rock and roll
The EB1 you could play either way, it had a telescopic pole that you could attach underside.
Joe Branton's
much like an effects pedal, like you could put it on your board either way.
Yeah.
And it would be fine.
Never. Basically, it was designed by US auto designer Raymond H. Dietrich, who also designed for Chrysler, Lincoln, and Checker. There we go.
Weird.
In 1966.
I see you there. Bloody lovely.
In 1966, Gibson changed the Thunderbird's design and construction, and the original Thunderbirds and Firebirds had a reverse body, with the treble horn extended and the bass reset, due to a lawsuit brought by Fender because of the resemblance to the Fender Jazzmaster. So the body styles were modified, the result being called the non-reverse. The expensive neck through construction was replaced by traditional Gibson set neck construction. The non-reverse Thunderbird continued until 1969, when the Thunderbird was discontinued. Though fewer non-reverse Thunderbirds were shipped, the original reverse body instruments maintain a high collector's value. Gibson started producing non-reverse Thunderbirds again for the public in late 2012.
Wow. Oh, so that 2012 was the first time it was back. God, I should have bought one back then.
Yeah. Crikey, I had no idea about that. I didn't realise they were discontinued. When you say they were discontinued, 69?
69, yeah.
Bloody hell. That is a really long time for that bass to have been out of production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we go. Right,
well, let's go buy those 2012 reissues before this airs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and there was also The Who's John Entwistle used a Thunderbird 4s, from 1971 to 1974, but was dissatisfied with the neck. He bought several Thunderbird bases.
Do you not know
bases.
About this? It's called the Fenderbird.
Yes.
Tell the story.
And attached, was discontinued and gutted them. He then had several bodies cut to the original shape, attached Fender Precision next to them, and installed the salvaged hardware, the Thunderbird. Yep. The Fenderbird,
yeah, which is exactly why Ashdown, because of course Entwistle worked so closely with Ashdown, that's why Ashdown made the Lowrider, which is a Thunderbird-style body shape with a bolt-on neck, a jazz-style
neck. So what we've learned here is Fender did it best, and then everyone's just tried to a better Fender bass.
That's not true.
I mean, I've said it many times, the... The 57 P bass is the greatest invention of the 20th century. Maybe the internet. And I'm sure there's some sort of like medical stuff up there. I don't know when antibiotics were invented. I assume that's like the 1600s or something. I actually don't know. I'm sure people are laughing at me now. But in terms of music stuff, the 57 P bass is the greatest invention of all time.
Well, there we go. You heard it here first.
Sure. Anyway,
penicillin was 1928. Sorry.
The 1600s.
So I'm going to say that the 57 precision bass is the third greatest invention of the 20th century, penicillin and then behind the internet and then penicillin.
It should go fourth, and we should have the status graphite model 3, I think, needs to go above.
The first status quo record.
That. Anyway, let's talk about some effects pedals. Bruce at Audio Distribution Group is always fantastic at making sure we get some of the new stuff that he's distributing to try out. And he did me a big favor by getting me an Earthquaker Devices Astral Destiny, the new Earthquaker Devices pedal that's just been launched for NAMM. This is absolutely right up our street, Matt, because this is... So let me find out what exactly they call this. So they call it a modulated octave reverb pedal. And what I'd call this is shimmer taken to the nth degree. You know how shimmer's normally just like an effect on a reverb pedal? It's something you can add. Maybe there's a little preset for it. Maybe you can blend it in or even modulate that shimmer. This is like taking the concept of shimmer and exploring every avenue that it could possibly go down by giving you something like 8 different kind of shimmer types. Now, they're not always, they're called like, there's abyss, shimmer, sub shimmer, astral, ascend, descend, and cosmos. So they're all differently named. But essentially what they boil down to is 8 different types of reverb with different styles of modulated octave, whether that's above, below, and, you know, just the what the modulation's doing to those octaves as well. And then you can also save those presets as 8 blank presets, so you can store your sounds and recall them via a rotary, so like a little clicking. I'm holding it in my hands. There you go.
That's very good.
But then the controls essentially are the length, which is always something you want to control, the depth, rate, the tone, and the mix. But where this gets really exciting is the second foot switch, which is called stretch. And what does it say that stretch does? Because, you know, this is what the stretch does. The stretch goes, it is really good. So it sort of does that. I really hope it doesn't do that
because that was just...
I'm sorry.
I mean, that's bad.
And that's what it says on the manual.
Yeah.
It's really interesting reading it because that was bang on, Jeff.
It basically doubles the length of the reverb while adding an adjustable pitch bending effect.
But you don't. You can either hit it and it'll stretch everything, so pitch it down, or you can leave your foot anchored on it and it will slow dive that pitch and bring it back up slowly as well. So you'd have to hit it twice to get it back up, essentially. So you can have it sort of slow down slowly and speed up slowly based on whether or not you're pressing your foot on the pedal or not.
Almost like a rotary. Emulator.
I guess so. Yes, yeah. In that sense,
because that's kind of like
it's a ramp control, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's interesting.
I think it sounds great. I think I like the way it looks.
You know about the artwork.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because the artwork is done by a Marvel comic book artist who I think's been with Earthquake for quite some time, but Matt Horrock, who's done a bunch of stuff for Marvel. So
cool.
Their graphics look so good.
Yes, that is true. But yeah, this is, you know, I mean, this is just another great pedal from Earthquaker Devices. And it's great that they're always trying to make something different, you know. It's never just an effect type with them. They're always looking to, push soundscape, sound crafty design via effects pedals to the next level. And I really think they've nailed it with the Astral Destiny. I actually think they've kind of, I know they've had pedals in between this, but I kind of feel that they've brought it back in line a little bit, made this one super functional. Like, do you remember the fuzz that they put out? The name has temporarily escaped me.
That was Walrus.
I mean the Who Can Google It Fast Enough? Ooh, yeah. Data Corruptor is what.
Oh, that's more of a synth pedal than a
fuzz. I was going to say,
pedal.
That's not fuzz at all.
Okay, fine. It's a synth pedal, but it was madness. Yeah. It was madness. Like, it was, I really wanted to use it because it was so cool, and I just found it difficult to actually find an application for it. It was too far for me on that sort of sonic insanity, but this is a perfect balance of being able to do crazy things but still make them musical and useful. I've got a lot of time for this. Astral Destiny, absolutely worth. I might upload some weird sounds.
I mean, it's a great name, apart from anything else.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
Strong name. It's a strong name. I might upload some little video clips of me making things go... It's going to be good.
Just with your mouth. Just like mic straight in.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not talking about the Astral Destiny now. I just mean in general. Yeah, no, you know, yeah, I might just try and do that. Okay. Should we stay on the subject of pedals? We've talked about something new. Let's talk about something very old. Matt Knight.
Yes. Let's talk actually about an a pedal that I have really loved and I didn't even realize was discontinued and had to come back. I think actually the one that I remember seeing was a more modern version, but Tech 21 have brought back the Sansamp Classic. So this is the original DI amp and speaker sim that that kind of made Sansamp's name. I know obviously a lot of people know the bass one. This is a guitar version, and I believe this was the first one designed by a Hungarian musician way back in 1989. And the thing about this is, I believe it's all analog. This is before the days of kind of a lot of modeling. So what's cool here is on the front you have a bunch of dip switches, and depending on which dip switches you select, that's your character selection. And you can go anywhere from sort of clean, sort of Fenderish sounds to sort of more sort of full-on sort of British Marshall sounds. And just really great for either, especially now with people running pedal board amps or whatever. This, you know, you can go into this and then go straight into a mixing desk or, you know, an interface. Or you could use it on your pedal board as your sort of, you know, as some drive if you really, really wanted to. But absolutely amazing for obviously recording. And as the press release says here, well, on one web page anyway, where would the Strymon Iridium be without a Sansamp?
Oh, exactly that. Exactly that. I just can't believe they've brought this back. Like in a time where everything is digital screens, and we'll talk about something with a digital touch screen shortly. But you know, in a time where everything is trying to be the next best super modern MacBook on the floor sort of thing, Sansamp have just been like, yeah, it's just dip switches and we've printed the presets on the front of the pedal.
I mean, so, this looks like this, it doesn't look like it's changed in 90 years. Where are we? Like, you know, nearly 35 years. It doesn't look any different. This is basically because there was something like this in the catalogue available when we were at GAC, right?
Yes,
Matthew?
The Sansamp, and I was just double checking that I wasn't going mad. The Sansamp GT2.
Yeah, so okay.
So level, high, low, and drive. And then you had three mic positions, three model positions, and three amp, or three mod positions, three amps. So California, British Tweed, which could then be sort of high gain, clean, or hot rod, and then you could have on axis classic or off axis speaker microphone settings. That's the sort of GT2 that's been around for ages. And yes, now you have obviously the classic, so eight dip switches, two mid boost, low drive, clean amp, bright switch, vintage tubes, speaker edge, close miking. And I think for a while, at one point, there was a relict version. I think there was a limited edition relict version at some point.
That is...
Amazing. And I think the sound example, I'm just on their website, sound examples. Please note, these sounds were created in our infancy back in late 90, early 91. Unfortunately, no records were kept of the Sansamp settings, nor do we know what kind of guitars were used. We only know that the guitar tracks were recorded direct using a Sansamp Classic and standard audio outboard EQ and reverb equipment. Please note, Synclavier programming by Bruce Nazarian.
Why didn't they just record some new examples?
You know, why bother? You've already got the great ones in there.
Just have the Synclav like there and just be like, look at this. This costs more than most people's homes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and included like a 1,000-page manual. I believe as well you can mix and match the dip switches. So I think depending on, the character controls, you know, do not adjust during live performances. Not designed to be during live performances. So you can mix and match all of the different character controls to make your own amp. So great for in a studio if you just want something that's quick and easy, not diving into plugins and the such. This is great. I'm into it. I want one.
Yeah, me too. Like I used to use these way back when they weren't vintage. And like, there's just like, there's really nothing like them in the fact that they all are, they're all analog, and just getting like a good, clean, ampy feeling signal into like your DAW and being able to reamp or chuck on whatever plugins you want to change potentially a bit later on. Like, it's such a good utility piece to have, and it feels like this is the 100% right time to do it. And it's sort of the, it's the classic one that you've heard on, you know, countless studio recordings probably, or live, like loads of people have done this. And it's like, yeah, there's boutique-y versions now, and you know, wants to do some stuff better, but this just feels like, well, it works.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
And yeah,
and like, and you totally don't have to use it. I was just checking here, and yeah, you can use it with guitar amps. You can go straight into a DAW, or you can go into a PA. But I'm feeling this could be something wicked to have on a pedal board if you want something to sort of like super versatile. And then, you know, if you want to go into an amp, you turn up to a gig, if they ever happen again, you want to go into an amp, you can, or you can go straight into a desk.
I am really into the fact that it can be used for, it says normal lead or bass, right? So you can use it for bass.
Mm. Yep. Doug Wimbish has provided a preset.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. And just, it's quite exciting just to have it on it.
Well, he's basically said, here's the settings I would use.
Oh, okay, right, fine. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
The old school presets.
Yeah, it's written in the manual.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, just to have on my desk as like as something to record into, I just, the attraction of it being an all analog unit instead of messing around with plugins and stuff is very attractive. It feels like you'd be getting the best possible quality sound, and I'm a big fan of recording direct to avoid having to deafen the neighbors. So this looks like a great piece of equipment back from the dead. I'm actually very excited about it.
Yeah, and I just was just looking into it a little bit more. So there's on the side, just trying to understand a couple of the controls, there's a switch that says lead, normal, or bass. So very similar, I think, to how Origin Effects have built their EQ. So you can go into a desk, or you can go into an amp. You have lead, normal, and bass, which basically one allows you to go into Marshall style preamps, one is designed for sort of Mesa Boogie or more flat EQs, and then bass, which goes for sort of bizarrely more Fender style preamps. So yeah, depending on that, you can set this, and then you've got all the character controls. Bloody lovely.
Really cool. How does anyone know a price on this? I hadn't looked it up.
I can't see one anywhere, but I'd imagine $250.
I'd say that's probably top end, I would expect.
Yeah.
Soundstamp are always, they're premiumly priced, but they're always, it's still quite sensibly priced at the same time.
Yeah, I can't see many people listing the classic at the moment, only the GT2. So have to keep an eye out for it. But we should find out see if we can get in touch with people who distribute them. I'd be very keen to try one.
Oh, I'm excited by this in a big way. Yeah, this is cool. This is my favorite thing from this podcast. That's the one.
I mean the thing too, I know we're just to take a second here, is it's like with everyone doing so many remote things or sort of recording to then ship tracks to a studio at some point, in the future potentially, like just having something like this like completely changes like how you'll play or how you enter, like how it plays with your effects. Like it doesn't feel like, it's like such an important piece of kit that you don't normally think like, oh, that'd be amazing to get. Cause you, like, for me, it's like the Sans Amp is like everyone has one, like bass players especially. And a lot of times they're used for their tone coloring. But just being able to like have that as a secondary option of like a flat, like load balanced everything is just it's so important for being able to do anything later and being able to like change your mind on. Yeah. Guitar tracks, like I'm sure like everyone who mixes knows how invaluable it is to have a clean tone, especially for bass, but like for guitar, like I, because I use so many plugins as well, like I love having just a clean, like if someone sends me like a clean DI channel as well, because either I have or have access to really nice amps, or I have extensive models, you know, yeah. of whatever, you know, like amps I want to use. So yeah, I'm very excited by this. Plus it looks so cool. Like it looks like something yeah. you would just turn up to in like a studio in like 92 or something, you know, like all those like VHS videos we've seen are like some, they recorded Rock School on this or something.
Yeah,
you know,
and there needs like, to be copies of the movie Speed. There needs to be a Warwick somewhere, a Trace Elliot amp in the corner, probably, you know,
Just an Aria Pro, you know, like an Aria Pro and like a Yamaha, like bass rig.
Yeah.
Where you're like, that's a PA.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's all the time we've got on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. You can, of course, join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds for an entire extra episode every week. Now, we've got a handful of things that we'd like to discuss. We're going to talk about Gibson's new lineup. I want to talk about this new touchscreen Zoom multi-effects. We're going to do that over there, but yes, you can you can become a patron and enjoy all that content. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar, you'll get this episode ad free and early every week. $5 will get you access to the Patreon special episodes and our entire back catalog. $10 will get you the lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. You can find us on all your favorite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Bye.
Samuel Frost, Brian Einstein, Evan van der Linden, Jacob McGee, Andy Manley, Scott Mantic, Robert Butterworth, Simon Milborn, Marcus Al Calawati, Stuart Robson, Neil Milton, Christian Van Hansen, Keith Adams, Ryan McDermott, Michael McVeigh, Eric File, Andrew Good, Joe Public, Merrick Peters, Richard Sunworth, Jack Cutmore, Ken Sayers, Adrian Day, Abe Matthews, Kytopia, The Band, Sean Arbo, John Anglin, Rob Rule, Tucker Avedon, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Burke, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Blake Wyland, Christopher Loser, Hans Ams, Derek Rich, Rob Nordvik, Steve Merkel, JD Short, Brad Page, Andy McKenzie, Robin Smith, Scott O'Brien,